We all love mob movies, Scarface, The Godfather, the list goes on and on. But there's one movie that speaks to me more than all the others, Donnie Brasco. It starred Johnny Depp as an FBI agent who went deep undercover in the New York Mafia. And unlike Scarface or The Godfather, it's actually based on a true story. And you know what they say, truth is stranger than fiction. I'm Leo Rossi. I've spent my life behind and in front of the camera creating stories about the mob. We're going to go off the page and talk to the real-life Donnie Brasco.
This is the season one finale of Deep Cover, The Real Donnie Brasco, with Joe Pistone and Leo Rossi. Stick around till the end to hear the trailer for season two.
Okay, location scouting. One thing, we may have touched on this before, but you went back to the old neighborhood, Greenpoint, where the Motion Lounge was, correct?
Yes, we did.
And on the people on the street, the store owners and everything, they were all, hey, Donnie, right?
Yeah. In fact, the one of the coffee shops that right across the street from the Motion Lounge, we used to go in and sit down and have coffee. You know, when I say we, me, Sonny, Lefty, and a couple of the other guys. And we also would go in there and have private conversations, me, Lefty, Sonny. And it was amazing because I walked in there to get a coffee, and the same owner say, hey, Donnie, how you been? Good to see you. I mean, he remembered me. And then the right next door to the Motion Lounge was a Italian delicatessen. I mean, yeah, those people didn't hold any grudges. Of course, they weren't mob people. You know, they were just hardworking people.
Well, it wasn't all a bed of roses there.
No.
There was a truck driver.
Yeah, I was standing on the street, and this box truck's going by, and this guy looks out the window and says, hey, you rat motherfucker, what are you doing here? What are you going to do? I waved to him.
What are you going to do? You can't please them all.
Nope.
Oh, something that you never had to deal with until the book and then the movie was agents. Agents, to me, are a necessary evil. That's the way I look at them. So from the book and the book dealings and all, how did that? Just take us through that.
Well, you know, I never thought about doing a book. I mean, come on, you know, I don't know that none of the undercovers I knew in the FBI ever thought about did an undercover job looking, hey, when this is over, I'm going to do a book. Nobody ever thought that it would get that much publicity at the first trial. But once it came out that, you know, it was an undercover FBI agent, spent 6 years, you know, dealing with the mafia, it exploded. I mean, every major newspaper, every major media outlet was reporting it. So I'm in a court. I'm testifying one day, and I'm looking out into the gallery, and I see Lou DiGiamo. Well, Lou DiGiamo was one of the top casting directors in his day, and he gives me give me a call sign, you know? I hadn't seen Lou in like 6 years, 6.5 years since I went under. So a couple of days later, I call him. You know, how you doing? You know, we're catching up. He said, I see you one day next day. Because what we used to do, we used to play basketball. I don't know if it was Wednesday or Thursday. It was myself, Lou, Randy Jerkison, Tony LoBianca, Sonny Grasso, Roy Scheider. We used to play basketball in the afternoons or, you know, late evening. One day I just don't show. And that was like 6.5 years ago. He said, I ain't seen you, you know, you left the court, and that's the last I've seen you. I haven't seen you in about 6.5 years. I said, well, Lou, you know, the operation. He said, you got some story here. You need a book deal. I said, I can't do any book. I can't do anything now. But so we kept in touch, and then later on I was able to think about a book deal. So Lou introduced me to Carmen Levia. Carmen passed away now, God bless his soul. but Karma's was with Fifi Asgard Agency in New York.
Know it well, yeah.
Yeah, you know that. And Fifi passed away too, and God bless her soul. So sat down with Carmen. I said, I can't do anything yet, but when I can, you're the man. And Carmen was from Newark, New Jersey. So Carmen and I spoke the same language, you know. Carmen was a good street agent and good street agent. Yeah, well, yeah, he was good street guy and a great agent. He had a lot of good writers, a lot of good clients. So when I was able to do the book, the next step is you need a writer. So, of course, Carmen knew a lot of good writers, and Lou knew a lot of good writers. We figured, you know, we needed a writer that knew organized crime. Well, that was a mistake. And I'm not going to mention the writers that we had lunch with or dinners with, but I guess it was about six or seven. And at the end of the meetings, as they say in the mob, at the end of the sit downs, it was going to be their book. It wasn't my book. It was their book, because they were the mob experts, and they wanted to write about sex. They wanted to write. And I said, I'm doing this legitimately. I'm not writing about so-and-so had a girlfriend, so-and-so had. They said, well, you'll never sell a book because that's what sells. I said, well, then I'm not going to sell a book. What do you want from me?
Wow. That's perfect, man. You showed them where you stood.
Yeah. So Carmen had another good writer, and he was a good friend of Lou's, Dave Fisher. So he said, let's sit down with Dave. Dave Fisher, he's written, I don't know how many books and, you know, bestsellers. Sat down with Dave, and he says, I can't do it because he was involved in another project. He said, but I'll tell you, he said, I know a great writer. He says, a good friend of mine, Richard Woodley. I said, all right, let's sit down with Richard Woodley. So we have a sit down with Richard. Richard had written a couple books. He wrote one book, and it slips my mind now, but it was a true book about drug dealers. And he had spent time with, you know, research and everything, but he didn't know anything about the mafia. So I sat down with him, and we had lunch, went over this, went over that. And he said, Joe, this is your book. He said, we'll sit down. You put this stuff on tape. I'll interview you. What you want in it, we put in it. What you don't want in it, we'll omit. He said, it's not my book. It's your book. So we made a deal as far as monetary value. I shook his hand. He said, okay, Carmen, you know. So Richard and I spent a lot of time together, and he wrote up a book proposal. Carmen sent it around to publish. Every publisher wanted it. They all wanted it. So now the next thing is, you know, you meet with the publishers. Met with all the publishers. Some I liked, some I didn't, but, you know, they all made good offers. But I liked this one editor, Michaela Hamilton, and she was with New American Libraries. She liked Richard. She had done a couple books with Richard, and she was straight up, fair, honest. So they make an offer. I said, Carm, yeah, take that offer, even though other offers were higher. So word gets out that we're going to sign with New American Libraries. Richard was going to be my co-writer. Carmen gets a call from one of the other publishers that had submitted a, you know, an offer. They wanted to have one more sit down to try to convince me. So Carmen said, let's take it. You know, it can't hurt. So we take the sit down. The guy says, you know, we offered you more. And I said, yeah, but I liked Michaela, and I like, you know, New American Libraries. I like their idea. But, you know, he says, well, I'll offer you X amount of money, which was more than what I had agreed with New American. And he said, I'll give you an extra $50,000, but you have to get rid of Richard Woodley. We don't want him writing a book. I said, I can't get rid of Woodley. I got a contract with him. So they said, contract don't mean anything. Our lawyers will break the contract. I said, how do you break a handshake? Guy said, you have a handshake with him? I said, that's all I need. I said, that's my word. He said, you're going to turn down this on a handshake? I said, well, let me tell you something. Every morning I got to get up and look in the mirror. And you know who I see? I see me. I said, thank you for the meeting. I'm sticking with Richard Woodley and my handshake. My pleasure.
Well, you deal, and I know you a long time, with your gut. Your gut tells you, and then you make a commitment. And I know, man, you make the commitment. Joe and I were, we got to work with this executive producer, and he was producing a movie that Joe and I were going to be producers on. And he wanted us to meet with a line producer. Now, a line producer is the guy that controls the money on the set.
I know where you're going, Leo. I know where you're going. Yeah.
Yes. So what happens is we meet with this line producer, and throughout the entire meet, the guy never looked at us in the eyes. Right, Joe?
Never, never. And that's it. When somebody doesn't look you in the eye, you know there's something going on. Never trust a person that can't look you in the eye.
And Joe said that to the executive producer when the line producer left. He said exactly what he said. And the executive producer, I'll say it verbatim, said, well, we're hiring him anyway. He's the best thief in the business.
True story.
Yeah.
True story.
Deep Cover will be right back after this short message. And we're back with Deep Cover.
Now, I started, well, before this episode came on, I promised the people that you would answer the question of who are worse to deal with, Hollywood executives or mafia bosses? So would you answer that question?
Well, let me say this, Leo. I spent 27 years in the FBI, spent 20 years working undercover, worked 6 years working undercover with the mafia, dealt with other organized crime groups. I'd rather deal with an organized crime figure than anybody in Hollywood, because organized crime figures, you know that they're gangsters and they don't try to hide that they're gangsters, you know? And so does that answer your question?
That's my buddy. Yes, it does. Oh, when we did a picture that Joe and I produced in Canada, I love to see him, as they say on the street, get his balls twisted. And he was nuts when the Canadian actors, because you can only hire so many actors from the United States. And so they're playing mob guys. They look the part. And, you know, say if you had to kill somebody, he said, the actor, whoever. And he go, yeah, I'm going to rub him out. Rub him out? No, rub him out. You know?
Or they'd forget. And at the end of the sentence, they say, eh? But they were good. They were all good. They were all good actors, and they came to work.
Yeah. And Joe almost made his movie debut in a movie that we shot in Pennsylvania. And you were going to play a stiff. You were going to play Leslie Ann Warren's husband, who was killed.
A dead stiff. Yeah, a real stiff. Dead.
Yeah, our
good friend, Bobby Maresco, was directing it. Leslie Ann Warren's husband was a mobster. He gets killed, and they're having a funeral. So Bobby says, Joe, why don't you play this, you know, why don't you play the dead guy? I said, what do I got to do? He said, well, we'll put you in a coffin inside the funeral home, and you just lay there. I said, all right. So they dressed me up. makeup does my makeup, and I'm laying in the coffin. They do the whole scene. You don't even shoot me in a coffin.
You know why he did that? I bet you. And I wasn't part of this. I was not part of this. But you had to wear a toupee. In that scene,
that's right. I had a toupee on. That's right.
That's what Maresco did it for. He's terrible. He's a bad
human
being.
And I'll tell you what, I don't know if real coffins are like that, but man, it was uncomfortable. It's like I was on springs or something. I mean, that was laying there for, you know, 2 hours. I mean, you know, not straight, but while they're, you know, while they're shooting the scene back and forth, and my. It seemed like the springs were, I don't know, like I don't want to know. But and then at the end, he said, I mean, you know, I got my eyes closed because I'm supposed to be dead. And then at the end, somebody says to me, you know, he didn't even shoot you in a coffin.
Yeah.
Our friend Maresky.
He is bad. Well, I'll tell you something. I had the scene in a movie where I'm chained to a chair. And it's, you know, in a dank warehouse, and I'm chained, and I'm there, and I've been there since like 5 hours, you know, back and forth. They let me, you know, and then, and I swear to God, this happened. Then they break for lunch. They all go, and I'm still chained in a chair. The prop guy forgot. The assistant director forgot. I'm screaming, hey, I'm over here. Jeez. Yeah,
that's it.
Making a movie is something. Oh, on the set, and I've said this before, but Joe is like E.F. Hutton. When he talks, you'd have to raise his voice. Everybody leans in. Remember that commercial, E.F. Hutton? And he runs a tight ship. And people really, because he's not only doesn't just talk the talk, he has walked the walk. When he's a producer, you know, not any other thing, but he's doing that job. So we are filming in Pennsylvania, and the director said, you know who'd be good for this role? Joe and I, who? He said, Tommy Lee. Tommy Lee? Who's with the guy from Motley Crue?
The drummer.
The guy with Pamela Anderson? He was a drummer. He's a great drummer. And he says, yeah, he'd be good for this role. I know he would. All right. Well, you got that feeling? Did you ever meet him? No. But so we figured it wasn't a big role. It was a smaller role. He wants Tommy Lee. You get him Tommy Lee. What the hell? Right? So it turns out one day, and Tommy Lee was happy to have it. He turns out he's a real gentleman, you know.
Leo,
and
before,
the women,
before you.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that, too. What a gentleman he was through that whole shoot. I mean,
yes,
there's another guy. I mean, how big was Tommy Lee? I mean, one of the best, right?
Yep.
He never disrespected anybody. He talked to everybody. I mean, I was impressed with him from being a big rock star.
Yeah. And what happens is we are filming in a tough part of the town. And the director, it was the director's birthday. So this was a tough part of town. And he decided he was wrapped for the day. That means he was done his filming, Tommy Lee. So he goes across the street.
To the strip club.
To a strip bar. Yeah, strip club, right? And
yep.
He comes back with 6 strippers. And I look at Joe, Joe, do something. Joe said, I ain't doing
And had him strip for the director's birthday on set.
Yeah. Oh boy, it's tough making
only
movies.
In the movies.
Yep. Now, dealing with actors. Now that you are well versed, you know, seeing them on the set, their behavior, seeing them in private life, because you know a lot of actors. Would you say? And I'll give you choices here. Most actors that you dealt with are, number one, egomaniacs, number two, sincere, number three, insecure, number four, very intelligent, and number five, knock-around guys. Which are you going to pick?
All but knock-around guys.
Oh, That's interesting, because you dealt with for 6 years nonstop with knock around guys, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, one other thing that is really, I think, quite funny, and it was real. I was there. We were filming in Canada on something else, and James Caan was in it. And James Caan, his reputation in the business was that he knew a lot of mob guys. Okay, that was what everybody thought, right? And so Joe and I are producing it, and I was there. James Caan came up to you. What did he say to you?
Well, I had never met Jimmy before. And he says, "I hear you don't like me." I said, "Jimmy, I don't even fucking know you." I said, "The first time I ever met you." And he was referring to, you know, being friends with mob guys and me being an FBI undercover agent. But you know some, Leo? There's another guy. He was gracious to everybody on the set. I mean, you know, and what was he shooting for, a week and a half?
Yeah.
I mean, and we became very, you know, very close. And you know, it's funny because the next day he gets in that night and we had dinner, me, you, him, and the other exec producer, Dan Blatt, God rest his soul. The next day they're going to outfit, you know, his wardrobe. So they're going to bring it up to his suite. And everybody is like, "Well, maybe he might not like this. Maybe, you know, oh, with this. And they said, "Joe, will you come with us?" We go up there. How great was he, Leo? "Jimmy, we'd like you to, you know." He was like, "Yeah, man, I like that. You know, he's like," but he was, we had another good week and a half with an A-list actor.
A-list all the way. And he was funny.
Oh, man, he told some great stories, didn't he?
He told me a story that I tell. I'll relate it now. He said, and this is not secondhand, thirdhand, this is firsthand. When he was shooting The Godfather, he and Marlon Brando became very tight. They became friends. And because it's a long shoot, I think it was three, four months. And they were staying in a New York hotel. In the middle of the night, James Caan gets a call, and he says, "Hello." And he goes, "Yeah, he says, Jimmy, this is Marlon. Did you know that an eel, electric eel, has 5 volts of electricity in its tail?" And he says, "No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. No, I didn't know it, Marlon." He said, "Do you realize if I had 5 of them, I could heat my pool?" He said, "Marlon, can I go back to bed, please? Please." Oh, Caan, that's a real story from the, you know, from the get-go. Years and years later, you were doing a documentary, I don't know, A&E, or you know, you've done your share, and you were filming at the Casa Bella restaurant in Little Italy. Right on Mulberry Street, isn't it? Yeah, I think it is.
Right. Well, right? We actually were in on a street in front of Casa Bella. Casa Bella restaurant in the day was owned by Mike Sabella, who was my first capo in the Bonanno family. I'm outside, and I was with a very good friend of mine, Joe Mazzilli, retired New York City Gold Shield detective. We're outside. I hear somebody yell, "Hey, Donnie, what the fuck you doing back here in the neighborhood? Haven't you done enough damage?" I said, "Obviously not, because I didn't put you in jail yet." And the wise, I knew him. He was a member of the Columbos. And he starts laughing, and, you know. But good thing I had Mazzilli with me, because Mazzilli's the only way you want to go against Joe Mazzilli is you better have a shotgun in your hand.
Yeah. No, he's the real deal. I actually was introduced to Kid Blast, Al Gallo, right?
Yeah.
The guy's got to be, I don't know how old he is. And
got to be in his mid 80s, maybe?
Maybe.
Close to it.
And so I'm introduced to him, and we were in there, a bunch of actors. We were doing a movie in Brooklyn. And he comes up, he says, I know you, the face. I know the face. And he gives me a little shot on my chin. I saw stars. That's his greeting. Wow. But, you know, it's also, you know, we tell stories about the Donnie Brasco movie. Very interesting, I think, to a lot of people. And you know, there's a certain poignancy, too, when you see a young actor who has all the talent in the world. And Joe, you had dealings. I'm speaking of Brad Renfro, who's passed away. And good kid, good actor, really a good actor. And, you know, he was doing drugs, and I know you had long talks with him. He was good. Many. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when he left, you know, the inner sanctum of the movie, he died of an overdose. Yeah. But I know you had long talks with him.
He was a good kid. You know, I mean, yeah. He was very respectful around us. And
yeah.
But, you know, He had his problems. He had his demons.
And it's always fun, you know, when Joe and Bobby Moresco get together and they decide to twist my balls, if you want to be. So we're shooting this movie in Pennsylvania, and I play partners with Brian Dennehy, a wonderful actor, just I. But we buried a lot of people, Joe. I'm starting to realize it. We buried a lot of people. He said, God rest his soul, God rest me. But before the movie, I'm a producer on it too. So I'm hanging with these two guys all the time. But I got to look half decent for the camera. I got to keep my weight down and everything. So I would go out to dinner with them, lunch, and they would order veal parmesan, this, that. And I had a dinky little salad in front of me. And they go, ooh, this veal parmesan's good. Oh, this veal. Oh, this and that. Oh, this steak. I mean, yeah, and they just loved it. And I took it like a soldier, like the soldier. You know, you started saying things to me, and I hope I don't carry this over. You know, in Hollywood, you take meetings. That's what's said. Oh, yeah, he wants to have a meeting. He'll take a meeting. Yeah, we'll take a meeting, take a meeting. Joe, you said, yeah, I take a sit down, a sit down, a sit down. It's a little different, babe, but that's a good thing. Okay. I do want to say,
Leo, what?
Yeah,
you know, you talk about actors. I got two stories. When we were shooting the movie up in Pittsburgh, you know, it was loosely based. It was a mob movie, loosely based on a good friend of mine who was worked undercover for the FBI. So we got him a little part in the movie, and his scene was he was supposed to walk up to the front gate of this mansion. He had to stop on his mark and talk to a wise guy that was guarding the gate. he always missed his mark. And finally, Moresco, you know, Bobby Moresco was directed, and Moresco's, does he know what the F? I mean.
Yeah, he was so paralyzed, you know, with what, fear.
What I'm saying, he was a great undercover agent. You know, he never got, because I worked with him. He had no fear working undercover, but he had fear with that camera in front of him.
Oh my God, he was. I mean, he literally he was frozen. He was frozen. You know,
and like I said, I did a lot of undercover work with him, and he was never afraid there. But when he got in front of that camera, hey Leo, do you remember? Do you remember up in Canada when we were shooting Falcone?
Yeah.
And one of the very good-looking actors, very good-looking actor, you and I are going to the set in the morning. We're in front of the hotel, and this actor is just coming in for the night. He wasn't working that day, so, you know, and... He gets out of his car, and this good looking lady gets out, and we say, "Hey," I'm not going to mention the actor's name, but, "Hey, good morning. And he says, oh, Leo, Joe, good morning. I'd like you to meet. And so I say to the young lady, very nice meeting you. And then she says, Sally. The actor forgot her name. Remember that?
Yeah, yes. He was a Romeo. Yes, he was.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Deep Cover, The Real Donnie Brasco. And what else, Leo?
Make sure you subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And now take a listen to the trailer for season 2, coming soon.
I want to tell you, our listeners, what's coming up in season 2 of Deep Cover. We will cover the Pizza Connection trial and the Commission trial, which was the most expensive trial in New York City history. That's where Joe Pistone goes face-to-face in the courtroom with the mafia men he had daily contact with in his 6 years in Deep Cover.
Wise guys are bad men. The same day they tip a valet $100, they chop up a guy and stick him in a 55-gallon drum of glue. Mistakes in their business means death.
Joe's testimony in these trials crippled the power of the mafia bosses forever. Throughout season 2, Joe will play secretly taped conversations he had with Lefty, Sonny, and other members of the Bonanno crime family. And then he'll explain their meaning.
No, he can't be okay. He's a fucking super bastard, I'll tell you why. Why would he rat you out?
Because I know the guy did stuff, you know, but I don't know why he would say, unless Mirror made him say it, that we cut up $250,000 in junk money.
Joe relates undercover cases he worked on in Russia, England, third world countries, and one case that brought Joe closer to death than ever before. And you will know the real reason why Joe Pistone quit the FBI.
From Jam Street Media.